is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 323 in the series. This is a special session as we have a welcome conversation with the new Franklin High School principal, Josh Hanna. I am joined by Pandora Carlucci and Jay Harrigan for this special radio gang type interview. Our conversation was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We have a wide-ranging conversation to get to know Josh and how he feels about his new role at Franklin High School. The pandemic has been challenging, but he's prepared for his role as principal, and he loves the high school experience. In the show notes, we provide links to his video updates. We also share the link to the Google form for submitting questions that he answers in the next video. Our conversation runs around 52 minutes, so let's listen to our conversation with Josh Hanna, the new principal at Franklin High School. This is Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM on the internet and 102.9 on the local Franklin area dial. Today, we've got a good session scheduled with Mr. Josh Hanna, the new principal of Franklin High School. And I'm joined by Jay Harrigan and Pandora Carlucci. Good afternoon, folks, and welcome.
Good afternoon, Steve.
Hello.
So, Josh, since we're not cornering you, clearly while we're the radio gang, we treat people better than a gang would. you've successfully navigated through the search process to come into this new role, albeit in the middle of a pandemic as well. But how did you prepare for principalship? And then what led you to say, hey, Franklin, I want to try this?
Sure, Steve, thank you. And to the rest of the team here, well, happy to be a part of the conversation this afternoon. I think honestly, Steve, it goes back a number of years into the early stages of my career as a teacher at Natick High School. I kind of would hear colleagues of mine, complain or share frustrations with the going-ons of our, principal or administration. And I've always been kind of someone who wanted to be a part of the solution. And so it inspired me to go to school and learn to become a principal. Went to Simmons College and earned my master's degree in educational leadership and kind of just waited and had some leadership opportunities in Natick as a head coach and as a department head and summer school leader and so on. And I was kind of, looking for an opportunity to grow within that field of administration and principalship, and spent the last 7 years at Hopkinton High School, my alma mater. And worked there as an assistant principal, kind of, living the job, learning about the different roles of an administrator and kind of seasoning myself, so to speak, for the next chapter. And, based on the reputation of Franklin High School and the kind of opportunity that it opened in terms of professional growth, when the position was opened up and I saw it, it was made a connection with me. Like, I've been working in Natick, a similar sized school environment. I kind of have an understanding of what that feels like, a 1500 plus high school in terms of students. I've had the administrative background as an assistant principal. I kind of felt like I learned what I was going to learn in that role, and it was time to kind of explore new challenges. Mm-hmm. And I just thought I would be a match with Franklin in the culture and the community from what I had observed as a teacher and a coach in my past. And it was a great process, and I was very fortunate and extremely excited to have been, picked to be the next principal here. It's an honor, to be honest.
Cool. Welcome to it. And clearly your July has been a little bit different than probably what you first thought of when you applied once upon a time.
Yeah, that is for sure. I mean, in March, when the application opened, none of this was a known entity. And throughout the interview process and the application process, much of it was online. But I still think in March and April, we had this idea that we'd be coming back. Mm-hmm. And as we got into May and in the later stages of May, it became pretty clear that that wasn't going to happen, at least for this school year. And yeah, I mean, July has been a relentless pursuit of how can we get back to school. I've been in the building every day, not on the weekends, but during the week and trying to brainstorm with my administrative staff and on meetings like this, Google Meets and Zoom calls, you name it. I mean, and across the state, across the nation, trying to learn about best practices, what makes sense, really what's safe, you know, and I think that's the priority. We value and love a high school experience. I mean, I was saying to someone the other day, I've been in a high school as either a student or a employee every year since 1989 in one high school or another. And high school and the experience of a high school and I get along very well. It's something I have tremendous passion for. And I know the value of it. And that includes a lot of things, not just the curriculum. It's the social emotional connections. It's the clubs and the activities, the athletic teams. These are all things that really create and give the students that confidence to kind of go off on their own and take on the challenges of the world. And to not have that is heartbreaking. But we need to bring it back in a safe, kind of deliberate manner. And that's what we've been working towards.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my high school days fondly, and I was fortunate to take advantage of, you know, between sports, some of the arts. Clearly they had a rigorous curriculum, so that well prepared me for college. And ultimately I was going to be the world's greatest English teacher. I ended up subbing for 6 or 7 years, but never getting that full-time spot. Otherwise I might be sitting in a role similar to you, although by this time I would have retired too. So, but yeah, high school is clearly a good, the opportunity for a lot of goodness. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Especially in the maturity of the individuals in that classification. Yes.
One thing I was wondering is I was listening to you talk. I think it is great the perspective you've taken with everything that's going on. We've seen, you know, the plans going forward, kind of different towns have different plans, whether it's fully remote, whether it's a hybrid type thing. How does that, do you use the information from the other towns? Are you talking to them the same way you're talking to your staff, trying to get an indication of what they're doing?
Oh, absolutely, Jay. I mean, I'm on text chains with principals from the overall area, Eastern Mass.
Yeah.
Really, I'm on email chains with a much larger group of people. We're constantly cross-referencing, you know, our protocols, our processes, our schedules with others. I mean, that's how we survive. You know, we're, a lot of us have been to school together. We've worked together. It's just
right.
Like any industry. You know, you're going to be sharing and leveraging your relationships to help put yourself in a position that makes sense. And, you know, with that, though, there are, and I think this is where at the state level, it's hard because they can't make an absolute statement. This is what everyone has to do because every community is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Franklin High School, we have the challenge of having 1,750 kids that come to the building every day. That's one of the larger schools in, you know, certainly in the area, probably in the state. You know, so whereas if you compare yourself to Millis, where maybe there's only, you know, 400 or 500 kids, that's, although we're still high schools in Massachusetts, that's kind of where the beginning of that story begins and ends. And so, you know, yes, to answer your question, we're in constant communication with each other. We're trying to take each other's best practices and see what makes sense. What can we apply? And, you know, a lot of the remote versus hybrid versus all in, it's the hybrid is an interesting phrase because I think it means different thing to every community, you know, some are going half, some are going 25%, some are going 33%. And a lot depends on the square footage of their building and how many people can they fit into their building at 6 feet apart. So for example, at Franklin High School, where our traditional learning environment at 6 feet apart, giving the teacher the opportunity to stand in front of the room with a little bit of space, we were about at 9 kids, maybe 10 max. And over half of the sections we have over 900 different sections of classes here at the high school, which is great. It's an amazingly individualized scheduling system so that our students' needs and almost all of their wants are met in terms of their course selection, but that does create a large number of sections. And most of our sections are over 20 students. Over half of our sections are over 20 students. So at 9 kids per room, even if we were to try to go 50% hybrid, we wouldn't have enough space to get all of the students without really getting into some very untraditional learning environments, which at that point, it kind of becomes, it's expensive to modify those, and you're also not getting a tremendous return. You're now learning and teaching outside of your typical environment. So now you're dealing with background noise. Now you don't have access to the you know, labs and other kind of learning materials that you normally would. So, you know, we've gone through that process. We've done our dry runs. We've done our kind of stress tests, and we're at a place now where we're still digesting the survey data that's been sent and seeing how, what size percentage of families would like to just do remote only. And depending upon the final numbers there, if enough do, maybe we can get to 50%. But it doesn't look like that's very reasonable right now. And so, that's part of the work we're doing here. But again, we're sharing the processes. They're being shared at the state level, all the way down to the building level. And then within Franklin, we're constantly calibrating our decisions. How are we going to run transportation? How are we going to get bus routes with different cohorts? And we're trying to pick up neighborhood styles so that kids who already kind of interact with each other will be in similar cohorts. And so there's a lot of moving parts. We haven't even addressed lunch, by the way.
No.
But that's a whole other situation. And I guess, if there were to be one thing that I could share with the community in terms of our work in this process is that, you know, I've never really participated in such a project planning environment where the complexity, it's like a Rubik's Cube times 10. There are so many moving parts and so many different things to consider. And while overarching is this idea of safety and our own health. And I think that that is what is making all of this so complicated across the nation. I just saw today there were schools in Georgia that already have over 300 staff members are either exposed or COVID positive. And, as we see the rest of the country open up, we're going to learn more as well. So that's a bit of a summary on what we're up to.
Just a quick kind of a technical follow-up question, if I could. You used, when you talked about the size of the classroom, 6 feet, which has been the standard. However, there's some discussion out there that a couple of weeks ago when the Department of Education announced, they kind of, it seemed like they altered that 6 feet to 3 feet. Has that affected any of your planning? How have you interpreted that or the people you're working with in terms of classroom setup?
Sure. So you're right. Yeah. I mean, again, and this is why I think we need to continue to be flexible, is that the kind of guidelines and expectations do shift. The state has recommended 6 feet, but basically says they're okay with up with down to three at times, And so again, these vague kind of summary points for us to work within. But we're also working with our teachers association, with the Mass Teachers Association as well. And they have their perspective on what is reasonable and fair and safe. And so we're really trying to strike a balance with, what we can get away with, so to speak, but also what we believe to be true and safe. And, my big message to teachers and students and families that I've been meeting with them throughout the month of July on calls like this is safety is my number one concern. And so, I'm not looking to message you or anyone else with, everything is safe to come back. But the CDC says 6 feet is a guideline. To me, that should be something that we're really focusing our attention on. And, will there be times where kids get within 6 feet because of the just kind of normal kind of in and out, walking around in and out of a building? Of course. But I don't think right now, based on what we understand, we should be using that as a standard. And that isn't because I'm not interested in bringing a lot of people in. That's because that's right now what some of the highest levels of organization have decided makes sense. Now, if they change their mind and okay, we'll adjust too. But for right now, I think it makes sense for us to be in line with that. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know how many buildings within the state of Massachusetts right now are functioning with up to 1,000 people in them. My guess is that number is pretty low. And I'm not terribly interested in being the first kind of guinea pig for that operation. I think we should kind of come in with a much lower number and build slowly from there until we're comfortable with our process and getting into a place where people feel safe and that we're actually, we're not just, this isn't like a fly-by-night operation here. This is a multi-million dollar industry. We should be really thoughtful with the resources we have, which are our most precious resources. We're talking about, our children and the lives of our teachers and educators. And so, I can't emphasize that enough. I know the push. Like, I have a 9 and a 12-year-old home. I know how desperate I am to get them back to school. I know the value of school. Obviously, my wife's a first grade teacher. You're not going to find a family that cares much more about education than in ours. But we're also realistic in what's happening around us, and there's a tremendous number of variables. And I think we need to honor that and respect that and do things safely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll let Pandora add something. But it's clearly the other complicator of, to remind the Franklin residents, the school was built for 1500. And you're serving 1750. So that complicates matters to begin with, even in the pre-normal, you know, the pre-corona days. So yeah, that complicates things a lot.
What I think was interesting about your response to the previous question is how everything is unrolling. We don't exactly know how it's going to unroll. There are myriad influences, and it's of importance to everyone. I think the interesting thing about Franklin is it's a very concerned community. And even if they do, even if a resident does not have children in the school system, they're still interested in the health, safety, and welfare of the students in our schools. They're concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of faculty, administrators, and staff, and how that's going to roll out. As you work your way through this launching process of the new academic year, How are you envisioning engaging with the greater Franklin community beyond the school, beyond the high school?
That's a great question. I mean, obviously next Tuesday, I believe, is a pretty important date for our school committee to kind of digest all of the different plans and submit their opinion and eventual kind of like stamp on how we're going to return. And so once we get those kind of, directions and organizational thoughts, we'll really be able to kick up our planning, and we'll be sharing that out, as soon as we're getting closer to that point, right? But I mean, you're asking more specifically, like how am I and how is the school going to connect and interact with the greater Franklin community? And I think, you know, part of what we do is open our buildings in our community kind of environment to a large array of people. We know that our performances, whether it be through our music, our art, or our drama, you know, area that we want to make available to the larger community so they can come and see the fruits of the labor that have occurred here within the building and in the teaching and practicing of our students. We know, and I know, how important athletics are in the community of Franklin. And so similarly, we're excited to open up our stadiums and fields and gymnasiums to the greater community to, again, be part of the Panther Pride that I hear so much about. I mean, one of the cool things about driving around town is the number of Franklin stickers on the back of cars. And I'll go to Stop and Shop. They have some nice chicken Caesar wraps there, actually, in the deli. I don't know if you guys have tried those out, but they're reasonably low in calorie, and they're also pretty tasty. And, to see all the Franklin hats and sweatshirts and T-shirts worn by, you know, young and old, it shows to me the kind of connection that the school has with the community at large. And I'm looking to be a great part of that. And so, you know, I mean, I'm going to be present within the building. I'm going to be around the community. I'm going to be at these events. I want to meet people, learn from people, shake, you know, in the old days you'd shake hands. Maybe we'll just share elbows or something like that. Right. And, I started
Zoom meetings eventually.
Seriously, you know, right. And so, I mean, I started creating some YouTube videos. I'd like to continue that. I know, the Google Meets that I've hosted with families have been popular and something I think I want to continue. And to your point, if we want to open that up to a larger number of folks to talk about all things FHS, I'm happy to engage in those conversations. So, you know, I think it's a balance of sharing information with the larger community. I don't want to drown them with unnecessary facts and things, but also I appreciate your perspective. There's a care level for what goes on here, and how can we do a great job of sharing that? And so I think, you know, our clubs and teams and groups that perform and that are around, we should always be thinking of ourselves as a big, like almost the heartbeat of the community. And how can we, make sure people are feeling welcomed and connected and invited to participate in it?
Thank you. I think that that's wonderful. And I'm hoping and looking forward to the day when we can actually walk into the building again. And I want you to know that when people ask that question as to how you would engage with the community, they followed it up with to let you know that they are there to help you make that connection. And there are so many organizations and committees and boards, you know, from the Education Foundation through the Cultural District, the Food Pantry, the Downtown Partnership. I mean, the list is extraordinarily long. They are there to help you make that connection, and they wanted you to know that.
Well, that's great, Pandora, and I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, my biggest takeaway from the last 2 or 3 months through this process has been the care level of the people within the town of Franklin. There hasn't been a group of people I've met or chatted with that I haven't gotten this sense of tremendously kind, caring, down-to-earth folks who want to help. And I mean, geez, how could you couldn't ask for a better definition of a group of people you'd want to work with. So, you know, and that's kind of who I am. And I'm looking forward to making those connections. I think there's great opportunity for our young students, you know, as we get more kind of back to school, so to speak, to make some of these, you know, community connections as well. I want the you know, different parts of the community who may not have kids in the building anymore still have a connection with our students, whether it be our students being role models for younger members of the community or connecting with maybe folks who, you know, no longer have children that are going to school. Maybe they're, you know, in their later years, and how can we learn from one another? You know, I think to me that's a sign of where quality education occurs is when it's cross-generational.
Indeed. And you're certainly aware as well of the other function within the school district with the lifelong learning. Clearly that helps the community. Pandora's had a long experience with that. She led that for many, many years. You may also be aware too that our current school committee chair, to reinforce the point of, you know, you may be the heartbeat, but she also has a Franklin TV show called It Takes a Village, right? So there are things that are coming together. So yeah, it's a good place to be. There's lots of challenges. We're not denying that.
No.
I know, again, in listening to where you're kind of coming from and everything, it sounds like it perfectly fits the Franklin mold, what we've experienced. I don't know how familiar you are with Mr. Perry, but you obviously have some, not just physically big shoes to fill, but some big shoes to fill. He was very highly thought of. Have you talked to Mr. Perry just to get some information, some thoughts, and bounce ideas off again? Because it's what he's doing is new, what you're doing is new, and then you add the pandemic in the middle of that.
Yes, to answer your question, I've been texting with Mr. Perry ever since I was brought on board. He was very gracious, welcomed me in, made me feel as though he was a text away, which he has been. And as I'm wishing him the best of luck in Weston, he's been wishing me the best of luck in Franklin, and it started with a tour of the building that he gave me, and it's continued with, you know, a great resource. And, you know, there were some difficult financial cuts to the district back in June. And, for me, kind of not being a part of it, but also realizing I'm inheriting it, it made for a, at times, bumpy entry. But Paul was there along the way to kind of guide, and there were adjustments made within our own administrative team that were unexpected, but you know what? That's life, and you're going to inherit things at different times that maybe you didn't plan on, and you got to make adjustments. And our team's been doing that really well. So I'm excited to kind of start anew, but also to your point, using the resources in the past, you know, success and traditions that Franklin have, and to learn from those, and to, you know, obviously Franklin's in a great place. You know, the success that they've had all across the map doesn't happen on accident. It's because there's a lot of hardworking, caring parents, students, educators, right? And that when all those groups are pulling in the same direction, there's nothing they can't accomplish. And so my role, I think, in these early stages is to really observe, learn, and take into, you know, inventory where are our strengths, and maybe, you know, where are some things we can try to polish up a little, and be really kind of thoughtful in that way.
You brought up the teacher cuts. I'm wondering, and I think I kind of know, but how much that impacted the back to school program, the remote, because the reality is if you're only going to have 9 or 10 students in a class, you're going to need more teachers, not less teachers, if you were to bring everybody back in person. So did that kind of impact the conversations that you guys had over the summer, whether on your level, whether with the school committee or Dr. Ahern?
Anytime you have to remove staff from a team, it's going to impact. So, you know, to what extent, I wouldn't be able to put a percentage on that. It certainly didn't make it easier. I'd be sure to say that. And I think, you know, I don't know if it was enough of a difference to put it over the top to say, now we can't go. I mean, we're never really going to be able to go all in. So we're in this like hybrid / remote phase. And again, I think we want to get to a hybrid. We want to do it in a way that's thoughtful. And so it isn't so much the staffing as it is, you know, in our building, even if we were to go half, it's still 1,000 people between teachers and kids. The actual arrival and dismissal of that large a number of people in a relatively small environment when it comes to like how many doors we have to enter the building, those logistics alone have kind of been a non-starter for the at 50%, even if we had enough staff and enough space, you know, and transporting that number of kids at only 25 per bus would really be a difficult thing to meet. So to answer your question, the staffing cuts, and, you know, I know it's complicated the way in which we fund schools and the fact that the federal government's been kind of, you know, again, they don't know what was going to happen next. Right. So they have to be, everyone's being frugal with their money, which makes sense. But when that happens, the rubber meets the road, unfortunately, at our local level. And we're not alone. There were many, you know, cities and towns across the state that had to adjust staffing to be able to, you know, afford to pay their budgets and so on. And so to me, that's, you know, that's a part of the equation, but it's much more about the safety than it is about the staffing that's kind of brought us to this point.
Yeah, safety is key because, you know, once you start thinking, and while you touched on lunch and then we kind of put it aside, any one aspect of the school day, effectively as we knew it, has changed if we were to proceed. And then when you start trying to divide that to do kind of the hybrid, the multiplication of the factors, the combinations, the permutations, the multivariate equation you end up with. You need a supercomputer, assuming you had all the values. And that's where, to your point, I think you mentioned that you're still, the school district at least is still evaluating the survey data to figure out, well, somebody said this, somebody said that, and what does that mean to a junior class, senior class, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just in awe of what you're trying to do.
So I walked outside the other night, and there was some baseball games going up over on top of the hill. And there were a couple of dads that walked by, and I chatted with them and mentioned, they were, you know, they said, are we going to go back? And I said, you know, I'm not sure right now. We're kind of looking at all these different options about what makes the most sense. And I said, but I could get it. Like, from the community perspective, they're looking at that saying, what the heck? The kids are playing baseball. Why can't they go back to school? And I understand that sentiment because it's confusing. But there are some pretty big differences. One is they're outside. Obviously, school would be inside. Another is there's probably 25 kids, not 500 or 1,000. So that's a pretty big difference. And the other is those kids kind of signed up for saying, I'm comfortable putting myself in a position where I know that the risk might be greater. My son played Little League, and we signed a waiver and understood. We kind of took that into consideration with what we knew about what was going on. School is a little different. We're not able to kind of have those waivers and that type of thing. And so I think, you know, but I do understand it. And, it, you know, of course, the people who have the varied opinions on this, and it gets cloudy, it gets into politics, unfortunately, and, you know, all these other things that I think aren't really a part of what I'm focusing on, but it is a part of the discussion and the overall opinion that I'm sure Facebook feeds are lighting up with comments on what we should do, shouldn't do. And, you know, the bottom line is there's no one that wants to get back to school more than I do, more than our administrative team. We just need to make sure we're doing it in a thoughtful manner. And unfortunately, there are some examples that make it hard for people to digest. And I get that, you know, and I've had a number of calls with parents who, you know, push back on where we're at. And I totally appreciate their perspective. And we desperately want to get to where they want to be. We're just going to do it in a manner might be a bit slower than what they want. And, you know, I'm no expert in the traveling nature of this virus. And so I wouldn't want to speak to pretend to be one. I think we should just be safe than sorry.
Yeah, I think that's a fair approach. Pandora, did you have any other questions? I know you had mentioned a couple at the beginning from the other community members, and you did go through a couple.
I did have another one, and this comes from Culture and the Arts. Franklin has a newly established cultural district. It goes from downtown all the way out to Franklin High School. And in fact, the high school itself was instrumental in receiving the historic district designation. We walked through the high school when it was dirt floors, wore hard hats, in and out, trying to explain to the people from the state what it was like, telling the story of Franklin, sharing the stories about the library, stories about Horace Mann, and how the different schools interact with one another. And so the cultural district has a large and varied membership, and they are aware of the Franklin Arts Academy. And that was one of the questions was, you know, as you're going through this process, if you see any way that they can help you as you try to advance the new academic year and throughout the academic year, and how they could help you to encourage and support the arts.
Well, I welcome their support, and I'm excited that they're on board. It sounds like the team of historical advocates within the town are passionate, and it sounds like they got quite a bit done. Now, there's a in one of the hallways, there's like a historical timeline at Franklin High School. Is that some work that that organization put together?
No, they did not do that. That was from the building committee. And I believe that was led by the chair of the town council, Tom Mercer. And it's a great.
Awesome. It's so cool.
It is, because so many of our high schools, with the exception of one, are all still present in some form, because the historical museum was the high school at one time. And then across the way where the Ben Franklin statue is, there was another high school. And the Davis Thayer was a high school. And the Horace Mann was a high school. And the baseball playing fields were a high school.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an amazing history and tradition, and to think to be a community named after such a historically significant founding father in Ben Franklin. I think actually some people say, and I don't know whether this is legend in Franklin or not, but that Ben Franklin may have been the last person to have truly known it all before the complexities of our sciences and maths and so on have grown far greater than anyone knowing it all now, right? I mean, there's zero chance, but they say that he may have been the last one to know it all, which is pretty cool to have a town named after someone who valued the idea of exchanging ideas. And, you know, I mean, if you think about a library and what it stands for and a symbol for a community, this kind of free exchange of the written word and this want to kind of pass information down, you know, I think as a young person, you don't really understand the significance of such a model. But the older you grow and the more you realize the importance of information and that sharing of stories and sharing of perspective and how that lends for us to all be better, right? I mean, the writing of a book isn't done to brag about what you know. It's done to share information about what you know others may come across and to use that. And we should always be learning and growing and thinking about the way we interact with each other around the world, particularly with our world growing at such an exponential rate. It's even more critically important for us to kind of understand the relationships that have existed and will continue to exist and how to navigate those things peacefully. So yeah, it's great to be a part of a community with such great history. And that's Massachusetts in general, right? Every town has its kind of stake on why we're significant. I mean, in Hopkinton, they would always brag about how it all starts here, and that was the marathon. You know, that's the cool part. I think that's why people stick around and live here for generations, is because it is so grounded in our love of education and medicine and history. And so for me, it's, again, like I said at the beginning, I mean, I can't emphasize enough the honor that it is to sit as the principal of such a amazing high school in a great, wonderful community.
A quick connection of two stories, and we can go at length at some point, but certainly Ben Franklin, who probably was one of the last Renaissance men, period. When Franklin named the town, they sent to him a request, we want a bell to ring, et cetera, in your name. And he said, no, sense is better than sound. And he sent us the 100-something books, which founded the library, which is where Horace Mann went and used those books to in turn develop his educational program. So, I mean, it's continuing.
Yeah, it's great. It's an amazing story.
So one other piece, and you may know of it, I should have probably also have asked Sarah. I know there was a lot of work on the Portrait of a Graduate. And I think the work was just coming to a communication standpoint. And then obviously the pandemic hit. Can you allude to that? Is that still forthcoming? I'm sure that's driving some of your piece, because you would be the key end point of that piece, but clearly the entire district helps to support.
Yeah, it's a pre-K, you know, through 12 kind of
vision.
Journey, yeah. You know, or vision.
Desire.
I mean, we're trying to understand what skills and content, and I think it's mainly skills is what we're really talking about, that we want and to assure our graduates have. And this is a process that's going on across the state, this idea of a vision of a graduate. And I think as we're evolving as educational institutions, educational leaders and teachers, we're realizing that we can't, you know, to go back to this kind of know-it-all situation, there's far too much information for us to expect to get through content-wise, right? Like there's no end to what you could study in a U.S. history experience, for example. But what we do and what we have come to realize is that there are really important skills to develop as learners, so that depending upon what field you want to get involved in, you'll have those at your disposal. And, you know, for me, resiliency is one of those key factors where, you know, the vision of a graduate of Franklin High School is going to be able to live within the learning curve for extended periods of time and really kind of honor and be able to digest that struggle that exists when you're being pushed, but you know if you keep working, you'll get to that understanding point. And, you know, among other skills, those are what we'll be focusing our teachers on, you know, assessing and practicing and really getting our students comfortable with that next, you know, stage. Because if you look at the world we live in, there are a lot of problems. There's a lot of areas where we can be better. Not just here in the United States, but across the globe. And we need resilient, confident learners to take on those challenges. And so the Portrait of the Graduate really hones in on those skills that I believe will allow for this next generation to continue to make our world a better place for all.
I was part of one of the study groups or work focus groups as part of that development. And I saw some of the preliminaries, but I know it kind of is on hold, probably rightly so from the pandemic perspective. There's a few other things that need to be adjusted, like budget and the plan and all this kind of stuff that we've talked about too. So,
no, but we're not going to forget. And I think, you know, one of the questions that's come up a lot is if, you know, and even if we're in a hybrid, there still will be a percentage of students who are remote at one point or another during the week.
Right.
So what's that going to feel like? What's that going to be like? And it's going to be a lot different than it was in the spring. The spring was an unexpected pivot at the last minute, and nothing that we did, and when I say we, I don't mean necessarily Franklin, I mean across the state, was what we would have had as our expectations of our highest production. Mm-hmm. Now, a few months removed, we're going to have some pre-year planning time given back to us, and so we're going to be really able to establish an experience that's going to be much more, I think one of the words that's being used is robust, but the bottom line is it's going to be a day of school, kids are going to be expected to be producing things. There are going to be assessments. We are going to be, you know, grading in a more traditional fashion. And so that is going to be a change. And I think, you know, as I've spoken to families about that, they've been a bit like relieved, because I think some thought that it was going to be the same operation as it was in the spring. And that's just not the case.
Yeah, I've seen at least one Facebook group get set up where some parents and others in the community are looking to set up kind of learning pods, if you will, which I agree in concept may enhance some learning, but that would work in the old way of remote learning. But to your point, if you're doing a full day of school And you've got marking and grading and attendance and all that kind of robustness built into the program. I'm not sure how they can do that.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. I think what we've all seen a lot of is, well, if it's remote, it's going to be the same thing it was the last 2 weeks in March, which if you take a moment to think about it, there's no way it can be, because you guys learned so much, whether you were here, you were in Hopkinton, wherever you were, you learned so much about the online teaching and what you can do, what you can't do, that it just has to be different by nature than what it was then. Plus you've had 4 months to plan for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so my expectation is that we will be able to address the standards, the content, the skills that we have believed in. Will it be as personal? Will it be as exciting for the students? And, you know, will the high school year feel the exact same way as what we've kind of grown to know? I mean, honestly, unfortunately, no. But we are an amazingly resilient population, humans are. And so my guess is we're going to come up with some pretty cool things to kind of fill in those gaps, because that's just the way, particularly teenagers, you know, when it comes to their, you know, enjoying each other's company and things, they're pretty creative. So I think as we kind of move along, we'll find different ways to, you know, release that part of what we know we need, which is, you know, we're a tribal being, you know, we enjoy experiences with large groups. We enjoy being together. We enjoy laughing and sharing stories and, you know, helping each other. That's like human nature. That's what we're drawn to. That's why, you know, we have 60,000 people will go, you know, down to Gillette Stadium on a Sunday, or, you know, it's why we have these large auditoriums here for everyone to watch performances. And so we know we want that. We're going to have to be creative in how we get that part of our soul fulfilled over the next few months.
Indeed.
I think it's exciting to look forward to it, because we have seen over the past 5 months, some things have arisen that have been really nice. They've been unexpected. They've been growing experiences. They've been collaborations across the airline, the airwaves. We had a very interesting graduation that people thought was wonderful. So I think out of this too, when you use that lens of a safe environment, respect for all who are in that environment, and robust teaching and learning, good things are going to come from it.
Yeah, we were talking the other day on a call, and using this platform as a way to assess is an alternative to a traditional test. But what better way to understand how someone gets, I'll use quotes, gets a concept or is able to practice a skill than actually talking it through with them? And so maybe we're not going to have 50 written tests taken at the same time, then all handed in. Maybe it's going to be a more personal experience where you could talk with your teacher about your understandings of the concepts. And that can be the driving force behind your grade versus the assessment. And, you know, it'll be a combination of both. But I think what we'll learn is this is a nice medium for certain things. Yes. I know I mentioned talking with parents on the Google Meet. If I set up once a month call at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday, and they can chime in on the chat with questions, things they've heard about. You know how it goes. A lot of times rumors are on the soccer field, and then it kind of carries from there. And I'd like to kind of put a stop to some of that and be able to, hey, I'm available. I'm not only once a year at back to school night. I'm happy to chat for 45 minutes to an hour on a Wednesday and allow for you to check in and say, hey, I heard this. Is that true? Or, you know, and we could talk frankly about things. I know, you know, vaping across the nation with teenage kids has been an issue, and maybe we could have some open communication about how can we support each other in addressing that. And I'm open to that style of communication. I know now I'm saying it, and maybe in 6 months I'll be drowning in so much work. I'll say, I don't know if I can handle that, but right now I'm keeping the idea that I'll have that enthusiasm and energy. And I've always been a, you know, passionate, enthusiastic person. That's probably, if people were to put adjectives on how I go about my work, those probably would be the two that most consistently been used, even from when I was in kindergarten on. And so, you know, I'm excited to make those connections and allow for people to feel a part of our school.
I just had a couple of more I guess technical, I'm not really sure. And sure. People would be mad with me if I didn't ask something about sports. Okay. So with the tentative plan for the school to go back remotely, do you see or does that have, I know the decision on sports will come from the state in the MIAA. However, there may be individual schools or school systems that think they may not be able to participate for whatever reason. Does the remote part of it impact anything or how you would feel about sports being started back up or being able to be played, or is it two separate issues?
Yeah, I think it's two separate issues. You know, I mean, we're going to obviously, again, it comes down to safety. You know, we recognize athletics and the importance in the character development and the overall kind of physical and emotional development of our young people. And so we desperately want them to be a part of our experience. I mean, I longtime coach and sports was a huge part of my life. And so, I'm scratching and clawing to get that as part of our back to school plan. And as we get closer to it, there may be some things that are stated that we need to adhere to kind of get in line there, and we'll make the adjustments necessary. I think that's the thing. We're so connected with these kind of like calendars that step out everything from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And that's just not going to happen this year. We're going to have to be a lot more comfortable with adjustments closer to the last minute than we'd ever want. But I think if we do things again in that lens of we know we want these things back, we know they're valuable, how can we do it in a manner that makes sense and is safe, then I think we'll be closer to getting there. There has been no, to answer your question cleanly, there's been no directive from the state that if you are one way or the other, then that allows you to play or not. And,
The other thing around that is, I know it's the same in Hopkinton. I know it's the same in Natick. You have a lot of outside groups that have relied on using the schools for whether it's meetings, whether it's practice, whether it's rehearsal, whatever it may be. I do know of a couple of school systems that have already notified me that they won't be allowing outside groups to use their school. Has that been discussed at all? And I'm sure it's been discussed. Any decision made on it?
Yeah, so anytime, I'm not sure of a townwide decision, but I know anytime you want to use an area within Franklin High School, there's an application process that goes through not only the Board of Health, but also the Buildings and Grounds, and you've got to describe your, you know, want for use. And so at this point, I'd say, you know, depending upon the size of your group and what the purpose is, then you'd have to get through those two kind of areas. And I don't know what the Board of Health has right now as a general standard. I would say where we're not really comfortable bringing in, let's use the, you know, the number of 1,000 people, I would say any event like that would probably not be okayed at this point, you know. And I'm sure the state has guidance for community use. I mean, that's the thing. Like Governor Baker last week said something along the lines of, you know, limit parties to 10 people. Now, granted, that would be with the not wearing masks, not probably standing at 6 feet. But if that's one statement coming out, then we certainly don't want to be supporting programs that bring in, you know, 2, 3, 4 times that. And I think that the balance point of managing the trust between, do you have any symptoms? Where are you coming from? You know, I mean, we're already seeing at the state level this kind of want to self-quarantine for 2 weeks if you're coming from outside of the New England area or a little bit greater than that. And so there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to outside organizations using the, you know, the facility. And so it's a long way of saying, I don't know. I'm not sure, Jay, but
yeah, right. The process right.
To go through.
It's fair under the circumstances.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this has been an enlightening and I hope somewhat entertaining discussion for those who will be listening to this eventually. Do you have anything else you want to say that we haven't yet covered? And obviously we've already alluded to that we probably will come back in some format in the future to help you as well. But, you know, anything pressing that we haven't covered yet?
No, I guess, in a final statement to the community listening is, you know, I'm a level-headed, reasonable, kind person who loves education, who loves the high school experience. And is new to Franklin, obviously, but excited to learn a lot about it. And if you have suggestions, you have ideas, you have wants or hopes or dreams, please don't hesitate to share those with me, whether it be through email or a letter or find me on Twitter or any of these places. And just reach out, because as much as I'm going to try to get connected with the community and allow for people to feel comfortable, I know there's a lot of folks out there with great information, historical knowledge that I don't have, that I'd love to be brought in on, and try to find ways to match up their experiences and hopes and what we can do. So just, I'm open to hear how things are going and how can we continue to make Franklin High such a place of pride for the community.
Excellent. Pandora, any last comments from yourself?
I just say welcome to Franklin. We are very glad to have you here at the helm. These are difficult times, but I think you bring a strong, clear lens, and you will be a guiding light at the high school, and you have a great team to help you illuminate that light.
That's true. Wonderful teachers, administrators, and staff, amazing people. Like I said, very kind hearts and excited to get back to work.
Jay.
Well, Pandora said, you'll find this hard to believe, exactly what I was going to say. Word for word. Same thing, want to welcome you and make sure you do know, which I think you do because of your staff, people are here for you. They're here to help. They're here to do whatever you need. The three of us are just a few of the many, many that will be here to help. And even more so this year, because it's such a unique and challenging year.
Well, I appreciate it. Like you said earlier, it takes a village, right? And if there's enough caring people within the village, then the village can do amazing things. So I'm happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. And since I recognized that scene, I had seen the prior principal there frequently on a Sunday when I was walking by. So since you said you're not going to be there on the weekends, I'll try and keep you to that.
I'm good.
Do what you need to do in your time. And if you're there, I'll just wave.
I do like it. People walk by and wave all the time. It's great.
Oh, it's a great culture point. Absolutely.
Agreed.
Well, thank you again for your time. I know you've got a bunch of other things probably on your plate in your day before the day is done. So thank you. We appreciate that.
All right. Thank you all, Steve and Pandora and Jay. It was nice chatting with you today.
Excellent.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.